The Inside Transportation Podcast is sponsored by Ford Motor Company. Built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress, from connectivity to autonomy, AI to machine learning, Ford has one simple goal: to improve mobility for its customers. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their corporate efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. The Inside Transportation Podcast is also sponsored by Fenwick & West. Fenwick & West is one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and transportation. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at fenwick.com. That's F-E-N-W-I-C-K.com. Hello, and welcome to the Inside Transportation Podcast, a production of Inside.com. This is our weekly podcast where we discuss transportation trends that you need to know about to stay ahead of the curve. My name is Johan Marino, and I'm the writer of the Inside Electric Vehicles and Inside Transportation newsletters, and I'm joined here by my co-host, angel investor, podcaster, the man who will happily be paying for Twitter's upcoming subscription service. I guess he called it before all of us. Jason Calcanis, how's it going?
It's going well. I'd pay $5 a month for it, yeah. I mean, I think everybody should pay, they should have the option to pay for these social networks and check a box that says, don't track me, and, you know, like, that kind of a thing, because we know how much Facebook and Twitter make off each user, so just let me pay you and stop tracking me, you know, and give me my privacy, and I'm good with it. And if I was young Jason, you know, I'd be like, yeah, no, don't charge me. Take my data, sell it to everybody. Who cares?
$5 like, even for young people is, you know, it's not too bad. I think I've seen a lot of young people kind of rebelling against Facebook and all those bigger social media networks. So we'll see what happens.
Into the arms of the Chinese on TikTok.
Into the arms of the CCP run TikTok. I'm kidding. Yeah. They say they're a Cayman Islands company because, you know, Cayman Islands,
sure,
they have a boom in tech scene.
Absolutely.
So, once again, because Cayman Islands, it's so beautiful there that you just want to start all your companies there. Definitely not because of the tax reasons and stuff. But once again, we have a special episode where we delve into your questions about the transportation space. You've all been mailing me these questions for the past few weeks, and now we're going to get to them. But before that, real quick, to kick things off, in episode 12, which was a few episodes ago, Jason suggested we stage a fake viral video of a Tesla owner trying to fill up at a gas station. Well, sadly, we were beat to it. A user on Twitter named Rex Chapman tweeted out this video that we're going to have in our show notes of somebody driving, it appears to be a Model 3.
Model 3, and wearing a Tesla hat.
Wearing a Tesla hat, and he seems to he thinks that there's like a gas cap. He's like at the gas station trying to fill up his Tesla, and he's kind of surprised to see that there's no gas. So,
and he got 50,000 views for this video, and
it could have been
obviously
ours.
Staged. So somebody beat us to it. We have to move quicker, or people are just listening, and we'll come up with another idea for a viral.
But maybe video. we don't talk about it publicly. Maybe we keep it under wraps.
That's kind of more fun to let other people go do the work, because I don't want to go and do this stupid stuff. I'm busy. I got stuff to do. I don't have time to make fake viral videos. To what ends? To get some tweets and retweets? I don't have the time. I'm trying to get off
of
Twitter.
I don't even want to leave the house. That's my apprehension to doing some sort of fake stunt, you know? I don't want to go out in the ether with all the COVID. One other thing I wanted to mention before we kick off today's podcast. Producer Nick actually sent us this Bloomberg article that said KPMG research suggests COVID-19 related changes to driving habits will reduce up to 270 billion miles per year. This is because people are staying at home, driving less, doing more online retail. And auto sales are also going to be impacted by remote work and online retail. So really interesting. 270 billion miles. I don't think we expected that, right?
Well, we did not expect that. And if it was an average of 27 miles to the gallon, we would be talking about, yeah, 10 billion gallons of oil. But you do see this, I think, acutely when a family has two commuters, the mom and the dad or whatever, or the, you know, the spouses are both going to work. They both need a car, right? Mm-hmm. Then you get a kid in the mix and then you need a third car. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm talking about people who live in the suburbs. Now everybody's right. moving to the suburbs and you're trapped there, and Uber and Lyft in the suburbs get a little expensive and take time to pick up. So I actually think there's a counter to car ownership. Even though miles will drop, people don't want to be, what's the word, stranded, right?
Yeah, because when you live in the suburbs or you live in an area like you were mentioning last week, like Lake Tahoe, right? Yep. You want to have a car to go to the grocery store. You want to have a car to kind yes. of roam around. Yes. And with shared services that people are probably using in the city, or shared mobility, micromobility, scooters and bikes, you can't lug a 36 case of water from Costco on a scooter. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, a scooter is not taking you 20 miles to Starbucks. You know, a scooter is taking you a quarter mile or a mile to a Starbucks, right? It's a totally different experience. So I think it's one car per person, right? Per adult, mm-hmm. rather. Or else you're like trying to do that. I never really lived in the suburbs when I grew up or anything like that. And I live in the burbs now. And we have to have one car per adult. Yeah, of course. And then maybe one extra, you know?
Speaking of cars, though, we did get a question from one listener who asked us about the future of online shopping and car dealerships after the COVID-19 pandemic. So we're all familiar with how Tesla sells vehicles directly to consumers, foregoing the traditional dealership model. Other EV startups that are in the space, like Polestar and Rivian, have also committed to selling their vehicles directly to consumers. Volkswagen, a very surprising development, because they're coming out with this brand new line of electric vehicles that are called the ID series, which have been delayed a little bit because of a software issue. But they're also committing to partnering.
That's reassuring.
With... what
exactly is the
We have to
what exactly
into...
is the software problem with my car? Is it the brakes, the steering?
Jason,
what?
I kid you not. This software issue, and this is a total tangent now. Yeah. This software issue that Volkswagen has been dealing with, they had thousands of cars ready to go to be delivered in November of last year, right? And this yep. software issue delayed delivery of these vehicles by like 8 months, 9 months.
Well, so you know how like they gave Elon a hard time about manufacturing, but he got the software right. And then like now here we have the people who know, you know, have like the domain expertise in manufacturing getting the software wrong, right? It's hard to do both.
Right.
Hard to do both.
And, you know, but kind of going back on track about like dealerships and stuff. I mean, traditional dealerships have worked to make car buying more available online during the pandemic. So they did like, and I saw a few dealerships, you know, have the ability to complete a whole transaction online. Because I kid you not, it's impossible in some states to do anything online. You know, in most cases, you have to go to the physical dealership.
That?
To
what
sign.
Is the history of these?
So here's
like,
the history
protectionist
of
laws. Like it's so yes. dumb.
Well, first of all, when you look at the history of how automakers have set up dealership networks, they're all owned by like third party companies, right? Mm. And the reason why it was set up that way is because, you know, car companies don't want to put in all that capital into building dealerships. I mean, it's expensive.
Yeah, it was like a
right?
hack. It was a hack.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's expensive. You have to have all this land to sit all these cars on. You have to build a service center. You have to build all this stuff, right? And it's real estate. And even in some countries where, let's say, Mercedes-Benz or Daimler have like facilities that they own, because it's not that franchise model across the world, right? They have some company-owned dealerships. Oh, they started selling them off to third-party companies because they realized it was just a lot more convenient for them to not own any of it. And it's not that different of a model from, like, let's say, fast food restaurants, right?
Yeah, McDonald's.
Because McDonald's is the biggest fast food chain in the world. They barely own any locations, right? They just sell them the system. Yeah. So the reason why it's structured that way, though, is because as you know, government comes into play. There's franchise laws in a lot of states, including California, that have kind of made it difficult for automakers, even if they wanted to sell vehicles directly to consumers, they could not, right? But now we're in this new era, right? Yeah. Where, you know, we have to practice social distancing, physical distancing. People might not be buying as many cars in some markets. So, you know, it kind of calls into the question, like, what's going to happen going forward with online, with like car sales? Like, how is that going to change over time? So if you have any thoughts, Jason, on that.
Well, I mean, I do know every time I've gone to a dealer, I've not enjoyed it. It's a waste of time. And it's arduous mm-hmm. and painful almost universally. The only time I ever had a good time was going and getting my Corvette back in the day when I bought my C6 yellow convertible. I walked in, the guy was like, "You want to buy a Corvette? I'll give you $5,000 off right now if you buy one today." And I was like, "Okay, hey, we get on the road to Long Beach and we're zipping
that
along."
Is, that He's is like, one thing though. It's like when you haggle with someone, you can get a pretty good deal. Right?
Maybe you can perceive you're getting a good deal. But anyway, I don't have time for the haggling. I just want to know what I'm going to pay and pay a fair price and know like somebody else didn't get a better price than me is what I want to know. Anyway, we get on the highway and he's like, "You going to open it up or what?" And I was going like 70. And I was like, "Really?" He's like, "Yeah, this thing's meant to go." And I was like, "Okay." And I'm like, going to 95 miles an hour in a test drive for a Corvette. I was like, "God bless you, man. This guy knows how to sell a Corvette."
Did you rip it on PCH? What was the
No, I was on a 405. Just zip it up and down in Long Beach. He's just like, "Open it up. Yeah, use the Tiptronic. Let's go." It was fun, man. But it's just painful and it's got to go away. And they don't make money off selling the new cars. They make money off the service anyway. Right. But it's just total inefficiency and it just shows how ambitious, you know, Tesla has been in trying to do the full stack, right?
Yeah.
And how much more delighting it is to be a customer of Tesla. Like when I have just trading in my Model 3 for the Y was so easy. You take a couple pictures of the car and I think it's just gotten easier and easier to own the car. Taking friction out is what tech companies do best. And there is no more friction than going to a dealership with salespeople. Like, what is the point of a salesperson? Like, would you have a salesperson sell you, like, I don't know, your groceries? Like, imagine going and haggling every time you bought groceries, how painful that would be. When you want to buy a pair of sneakers, you haggle over the price. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't want to haggle over the price of anything. Just give me the fair price. I order it online. I got the lowest price. That's it.
And then you think about how millennials are buying products, right? Which is everyone's thinking about millennials and Gen Z and the next generation of how we're making people buy stuff. And you think about how easy it is to order something off of Amazon, literally anything you can think about with the click of one button. Yet when it comes to buying a big ticket item like a car, there's only like one or two companies out there that actually let you, you know, start the transaction from beginning to end online. But my question to you, Jason, this might be kind of interesting. Do you think Amazon's ever going to try to get involved in the car space or the auto space, try to sell cars directly to consumers on Amazon?
eBay has a huge business in eBay autos, right? So much so that they made, I believe it's got its own domain name. I remember that was a big controversy that eBay Motors, eBay Motors is still under the eBay domain name. I remember like the eBay Motors experience, there was a moment in time where they were like going to spin it out as its own company, I believe. And they were really trying to make this like, they have their own app. So they do, I'm on their website and they have an app, Innovative Experience for Unique Vehicles, Test Drive the App, Built for Auto Enthusiasts. So they built their own app for eBay Motors. So it's just some experiences are so all encompassing. You want to give them all of your attention. So yeah, sure. Of course they would. Yes. I mean, they're selling, I think they're selling furniture, obviously. That's a big ticket item. And they were selling those in-law units that you put in your backyard, like the giant sheds, but like little mini houses. So yeah, of course. Why not? Amazon could sell it. Really, the thing is, think about all the opportunities where, let's say, you know, you bought the Ford Bronco, you had it for 3 years, you put a lot of miles on it. And they now know that there's a market for that car amongst a group of people who want to pay a decent price for it. They don't mind it having mileage because it lasts a long time. It's got good reliability. And they have the email addresses everywhere. And they just email 1,000 people and say, "Hey, we have a lot of demand for your specific you know, Ford Bronco from back in 2020 you bought, you know, it's 2027, you know, and you've been sitting on that for 7 years and you got 90,000 miles. Would you like to trade it in for $8,000, $8,500 towards this new one? And we'll give you free snow tires. Like, they could do dynamic stuff like that if they actually knew the customer and knew the number of miles on their car. You know, they could be giving them those upsell offers like on their phones or by email, right?
Yeah, and they have all that data too, as far as like what they buy on Amazon. If you're thinking about like Amazon potentially getting into the space, they know if, let's say, you're buying a bunch of products, you know, that are like for babies, you know, they might target a family size car, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of scary when you think about it, because it's like, I think that they're that one force that has yet to kind of come into the space where that can absolutely dominate. And they
tried to do it they tried to do it mobile phones. I don't know if anybody buys their mobile phone from Amazon. I don't know if people buy.
Are you talking about like the Fire Phone or
like cell
that
phones?
One?
No, they tried to have like a cell phone section where you could like, you know, pick. It was supposed to be a big deal. You know, you'd pick your provider, AT&T or Verizon, pick your phone, and they were going to make it work better than anybody. I don't know anybody who's ever bought, you know, their you know, service or phone, anything but direct from Verizon, right? There's another place where stores, like, what is the point of their being Verizon stores, right? It makes no sense. Like, why do they have all this infrastructure and retail? It's a waste. And like, I order my iPhone when I upgrade it online, and I order my Google Fi phone. I always have an Android and a regular iPhone because I'm in the tech business. I have to know both platforms. I'll just order whatever the latest Pixel is from Google Fi, and they just send it. Done.
Right.
It's easy peasy.
Older people, I think, are the reason why they still have retail stores.
Are there any of those left?
I'm an alum. Look, I'm an alum of Radio Shack. I used to work at Radio Shack, and I used to sell. I was a cell phone sales champion. Rest in peace, Radio Shack.
You were a consultant?
Although once I actually saw, I think there's still a few franchise Radio Shack stores. I saw one in the middle of nowhere in Idaho near Sun Valley. And there is a Radio Shack there. So if anyone's interested in visiting, think somewhere, just look up Idaho. But yes, when we come back from our break on the Inside Transportation podcast, we're delving into your questions. So these are all questions, you know, brought up to you by our listeners. And we're going to be talking about about VTOLs. Is the public ready for VTOLs? We'll be talking about that when we come back on the Inside Transportation podcast. Stay tuned.
Hey, everybody, just want to let you know that this episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by our friends at the Ford Motor Company, built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy. Ford has one simple goal, and that's to improve the mobility of its customers. Ford has been using technology to shape the future of transportation for over 100 years and is dedicated to solving the world's most pressing mobility issues. What you might not know is that Ford has a series of divisions that make these visions a reality. Ford X is Ford's venture incubator that unites entrepreneurs, designers, and engineers to shape the future of transportation. Ford's City Innovations team brings innovative ideas to life through community workshops, crowdsourcing initiatives, and citywide mobility challenges. And Spin, a property of Ford, brings e-scooter sharing to cities and college campuses. So here's your call to action. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. Thanks again to Ford for sponsoring independent media like this podcast.
And we're back on the Inside Transportation podcast. Johan and Jason chopping up your questions. These are all listener-submitted questions. One listener asked us whether the public will be ready for VTOLs and autonomous VTOLs when they're ready for release. A Wall Street Journal article I was reading said that the future of VTOLs lives and dies with public perception of VTOL safety. So there was actually this urban air mobility market study that was presented to NASA last year. And the research found that there were some potential challenges in convincing consumers to take advantage of VTOL service. So some consumers said that they were worried about VTOL safety and security screenings. There is not a lot of details as far as what security screenings would be at VTOL base stations. While also consumers are preferring, you know, air mobility for longer trips and, you know, short distance. I mean, a lot of the VTOL promise right now is getting people around traffic. And, you know, in a lot of major cities right now, there's not a lot of traffic. So it's kind of interesting to see how that's going to affect the development of this. Airbus also conducted research on public perception of VTOLs, and they found that nearly 56% of consumers are concerned about safety. About 50% of consumers are worried about the sound generated from the aircraft, and about 48% are concerned about the volume from VTOL sound. The least concerning aspect is the landing space of the aircraft. And we've seen a lot of these proposals have these base stations on the top of buildings and like downtown areas throughout the, you know, the world and stuff like that. Although Uber does see VTOLs as safer than conventional helicopters because of the fixed routes between skyports. So Jason, do you think that the public is ready for VTOLs? I'll share some of my thoughts afterwards.
Yeah, so I think this is going to be a matter of the early locations and the early routes is going to be very important to pick these wisely. And I think people are very open to new forms of transportation. You see that with people embracing autopilot and that kind of stuff. It'll just be a matter of, God forbid, there's some very high profile accident, because a high profile accident can change everything. Back in 1977, when I was 6 years old in New York City, there was a helicopter accident on top of the Pan Am building and Pan America building, and five people were killed. And they used to have this incredible experience where above Grand Central Station, there was like the Pan Am building, which I think is the MetLife building maybe now. And they used to have these like two propeller helicopters that would take you in like 15 minutes, no, it's 10 minutes to Kennedy Airport off of the roof of the Pan Am building. And these were those Sikorsky S-61s. And these are 50 foot long, 30 passenger helicopters. And they would just zip them. So, you know, they would be moving a lot of people to JFK. It was like an amazing experience. It was like, you would go and they had like a lounge. So if you were a Manhattanite or you lived in the boroughs that were in Brooklyn, because that's pretty close to JFK, you could just go to the building, boom, and all of a sudden. What happened was one of the struts on those things broke when it landed. So it landed perfectly, but the blades, like, you know, what happens when helicopters tip over, and it just hurled, you know, stuff off the side of the building. And that was the end of that. So basically then Manhattan said no more. I believe ever since then there was no more landings on top of buildings in Manhattan. Which, so that just goes to show, you know. And then Kobe, everybody knows, used to fly helicopters to the Staples Center. And we know how that tragedy ended. And so one high profile accident can change things forever. And when there was a helicopter crash landed, back in 2019 in New York, I don't remember if that on the roof of a building, but it wasn't a scheduled landing. And you have all of these like helicopter landing things on the top of buildings that are no longer used in major cities where they're not allowed. And then some cities they are, because people consider it too dangerous.
So it's kind of interesting that you mentioned that the like first markets are going to be so critical. If you're just thinking about the US, what markets do you think would be good targets? Like, for me, I think for sure you want to get Silicon Valley as like one of the first.
That's gotta be the first one. I think
they're gonna be so open-minded to it.
Yes.
But then you want to think about, like, let's say Texas, maybe Nevada, like,
oh, actually, you know what? It's not gonna be San Francisco, because we have fog. It could be like and wind. It might be very bad to do this in Chicago or San Francisco, places that are windy. So you might have to think about weather. So I think Arizona, Texas, you might be the right way to think about this, is places where, you know, Vegas, going over the Grand Canyon, like those kind of things could be very interesting.
That would be sick to take like a VTOL from one end of the strip to the other.
Well, you know, Vegas, people do all kinds of crazy stuff. You know, they have like the machine gun places. So They have that slide or something where you take a slide down the side of a building.
The slot machine. Yeah, the slot machine that like you hang you know, yourself over
downtown.
Yeah,
what could go wrong?
Las Vegas. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like drunk people. There's a zip line in the old part of Las Vegas. Old Las Vegas has a zip line that goes across like some mall or something. So yeah, I think Vegas is a good place to start it. You know, nobody cares if somebody dies in Vegas. But no, I think you have to be, they're going to have to be careful about weather. And any place, if it goes over water, that's going to be, because you have two different people who can die. People who've opted into it and then people who didn't. Mm. And the problem with the Pan Am building one was I believe that somebody on the ground, so it says three, let's see. I'm just pulling it up here off the Wikipedia. It landed.
We'll put some more information on this in the show notes as well.
Yeah. About 1 minute after it landed and its 20 passengers just embarked, the right landing gear collapsed. Okay. So it was landed, causing the aircraft to topple onto its side with the rotor still turning. One of the five 20-foot blades broke off and flew into a crowd of passengers waiting to board. Three men were killed instantly, and another died later in the hospital. The blade sailed over the side of the building and killed a female pedestrian on the corner of Madison Avenue and 43rd Street. Two other people were seriously injured. Helicopter service was quickly suspended and never resumed. This is the tragedy of New York Airways in the heliport from Pan Am to JFK. And also they used to go to Teterboro, which is a private airport in Jersey. So the woman who did not opt into this, who was just walking down the street on Madison and 43rd, that's, I think, what made this one cause the cancellation. If a civilian who wasn't opting into this had not died, I bet you they would keep doing it. It really is. If one of these things lands on somebody's head and kill, God forbid, kill some kid or a family, that's when you're kind of like, oh, that's not cool. You know?
Yeah. But I guess when we think about automation though, because I mean, the ultimate goal and the NASA research actually found this is that consumers have trust issues with automation and autonomous VTOLs, which I think that's the ultimate goal for these vehicles, is to just be unmanned. And it'll be interesting to see like how people react to not just a VTOL, but an autonomous VTOL flying them around cities. I think they're eventually, I mean, just with like with any piece of technology, people will learn to embrace it. But it's going to be kind of interesting to see where it starts. And I think it's going to be primarily in states that are very low regulations, that, you know, want innovation and stuff like that to kind of fly over the cities and solve some of their gridlock problems too. Atlanta might be another good area, because I know Atlanta suffers from really bad gridlock on the freeways.
Yeah.
And they have a pretty liberal, or not liberal.
I think the first use case for this is going to be tourism and thrill seeking, which then, you know, kind of lowers the bar on a lot of these regulation issues. So, you know, people do bungee cord jumping and, you know, all this kind of skydiving. I think it's going to fall into that kind of category, kind of like helicopters in Hawaii, which crash all the time. Like, and there's like this kind of like internal joke in Hawaii where like no company providing helicopter service in Hawaii has ever had an accident today. Because
I've heard that one.
Yeah, it's like anytime they have an accident, they just change the name of the company and reincorporate the other helicopters. So I think it's going to be those kind of situations. And I believe other countries will get there first, you know, Singapore, China, et cetera. But we have a bunch of companies here doing it. So don't be surprised. And consumers will get through it. In terms of not having, I never thought about like the safety in a 9/11 kind of way, since we're kind of going there, if we're going to take all the edge cases. Like, what if somebody gets on one of these things, it's for 10 people and one person loses their mind and there's no pilot or flight attendant or air marshal to calm them down. And, you know, they start a fight at whatever, 10,000 feet. That could be really bizarre. But I think most of these, when they first come out, will be two or four passenger. And I think most of them will be two. And so it'll be you and your friend or you and your friends, and it'll be fine. But I always worried about that on helicopters. I've only been on helicopters twice, but like, you know, the pilots are kind of preoccupied and you're in the back. Like, are there people who've lost their minds on helicopters and like caused incidents or opened the doors like people try to do on a flight, but the other passengers can stop them? But we have all of the airport shuttles, you know, that go like the trains, the little shuttles. They don't have conductors, so people will be fine with that, I believe.
Do you think that when VTOL flights start, like you said, it's probably going to be like a recreational thing, but as far as cost, right? Because the ultimate promise of a VTOL is to make it the same price as like an Uber ride. Yeah. But do you think that just like any other tech product, out of the gate, this is going to be a very exclusive thing for a very small subset of people that are going to be trying this at first?
Yeah, no, it's going to, it always starts most expensive because there's going to be insurance issues, operational issues, battery density issues. The first units are all going to be, you know, $1 million to make or something like that. So they're going to have to make that money back. But the operational cost should not be high because they're going to use batteries that are replaceable. Because it would take too long for the VTOL to land and then charge the batteries and then take off again, right? Even with supercharging stations. So what I've seen in the mock-ups, because I've been pitched on these as investments, is they land, they kind of go along a conveyor belt, the battery pack comes out one side, a new battery goes in the other side, and they're ready to take off again. So they would, because they're autonomous, without a pilot, the cost should be very low to operate these, right? And if they're on a set thing, like going across the Grand Canyon or going across a lake, you know, like they said, they had them going across Lake Tahoe or some other body of water that's feel safe, like going to Alcatraz and back off of like some dock or something where nobody can get hurt. I think, or, you know, it's if the, one of these things does crash, it's going to, you know, go from 2,000 feet in the air, 3,000 feet in the air and come down, land in the water, a couple of pontoons come out and probably people survive, right? So
yeah,
I think they're going to do some sort of safer route like that, and they'll ease people into it.
Yeah, I think so too. And to some point, I think there's going to have to be a formal introduction for most people to this type of technology. So it might be that it's actually kind of affordable initially because people just want, I mean, these companies are probably just going to want people to experience this too.
All right, would you do it in
year? It's either going to go.
What year would you feel most comfortable in doing this in the United States? Assuming the track record is there's been no accident, no deaths, right? Maybe there's been one emergency landing. Okay, so I'm setting the stage. There's been one emergency landing, and it had to land in the water, and everybody caught it on video. It just landed in the water safely, and they got picked up by a boat, no problem. But no crashes, no deaths, and they've been running every day, going to Alcatraz Island and back or across the Grand Canyon. What year would you feel safe doing it in operation?
Look, I would do it the minute it's available.
You would do it
me.
Year one. You're year one?
You know, because
I'm not year
one. I would do it year one, yes. I'm not year one. What about you?
I'm like year three.
What?
Yeah. Huh. Only because I have three kids. And I, you know, I stopped doing any high-risk activities. You know, like I like to scuba dive, but I don't go past 30, 40 feet anymore. You know, like one fathom kind of situation. So, you know, I have to do a decompression stop kind of situation. Like I used to go to 100 feet and, you know, that's pretty dangerous. You know, if you go 30 or 40 feet, you can just take your gear off and go right to the top and survive. You probably make it. Yeah. You know, if you're at 100 feet, something goes wrong, you're dying. So I, you know, I don't ride motorcycles anymore for that reason. And I just, you know.
You used to ride motorcycles, huh?
When I was a kid, you know, I had a Vespa in New York that I drove for 10 years in Manhattan, in the snow, in the rain. I didn't care. You know, you know, I would be like,
maybe I'm just too young. I'm too young to answer your question because I'm still in that state of
how
mind
old are you?
Where I'm like, I'm down. 27 years
yeah,
old.
Yeah, at 27, I think, like, you know, I mean, you'll see your brain kind of changes when you have kids and you're like, I just want to be there for them. You know, I don't want them to not have their dad because I was selfish and had to fly like a Chinook off the top of the Pan Am building to save 30 minutes. Right. Like, I don't want to be that guy who like,
or I had to take a little leisurely trip in a VTOL across Lake Tahoe.
Yeah. It's just like, it's kind of like, it's a cool way to die. Is it? I don't know if it's a cool way to die. No, it's not. No. Not a cool.
I don't think any death is cool.
Well, I mean, if you saved some, you know, if you jumped on a grenade and you saved everybody and you're a hero, I guess that's like that would be a better death.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a better death.
That's true.
I
mean,
I don't know. Yeah. At the end of the day, maybe it doesn't matter, but you should look up the, there's a YouTube video, the life and death of helicopter commuting on YouTube, that Bloomberg did. It's like, cause everybody in Manhattan always wonders like, why don't we have helicopters landing? They only land on the west and the East Side, and this, The Life and Death of Helicopter Commuting, Bloomberg did, like, you know, they do these little like explainer videos. They did it back in 2017.
Yeah.
And that's where I'd first seen about it, because they were talking about VTOLs 40 years after this accident, and what that would look like. And they had people, I think they had one of the, in this special, they had one of the pilots, not of that flight, but of other flights, talk about how it happened. And the strut fell off. And they might have had some survivors in this little mini 10-minute documentary. It's fascinating. So this is what you're hoping
we'll make
for.
Sure to...
It's what Elon's hoping for too, right? With anybody who's, or, you know, Uber self-driving project and that tragic death. How far back did that set the industry? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that set the industry back at least a year, right?
Oh, minimum. I mean, a year, if not 2 years, right? And especially Uber, which basically they paused operations for a while, and every other company followed suit right after that accident, which was crazy.
Well,
because it didn't just affect Uber, but it was every other company that was developing some sort of automated driving technology. They all took a step back and they were like, no, this isn't the right time. Which is interesting because, you know, obviously, as we learned, Uber's tech wasn't up to par with their competitors.
There was at that point. The safety, their tech was in development, and the safety driver was looking at their phone while on camera, which is why they should always have two safety drivers. Because it turns out what Google found out when they had one safety driver was, no matter how many times they told them, there's a camera recording you, please don't look at your phone, they still did. When you had two people, it's like a pilots where they check on each other. And they act as a check. If you're a pilot, you know, and you're the co-pilot, you know, like, you're not going to screw around, because the co-pilot's like, what are you doing, right? There's like the social pressure. So none of those early self-driving tests should have been done without two folks, in my mind.
Right. Makes sense, though. It makes a lot of sense.
And the other companies had no choice but to, before we go to commercial, the other companies had no choice, because what if there was a back-to-back accident, right? And then it's like, ooh. Mm. So that would be like the helicopter, the VTOL crashes on the way to, you know, Alcatraz, if that was the run that was being done. Like, and one person dies. And then they're still running with the Grand Canyon. The next week, one person dies. Now the industry's iced for a decade, right? Like, who's getting in one if two go down in a week, or, you know, the same time period? It's weird when you think about human psychology, but two tragedies occurring in a short period of time would be more...
They become connected to one another.
Now it's like a trend in people's mind, and the whole technology, even if it was just bad luck statistically, it's not bad luck statistically in the consumer's mind. It's a trend.
Right. And we're going to put that video in the show notes. We have this brand new Notion page where you can see all our show notes.
Yeah,
there's links,
cool.
Videos, images, stuff like that. So you can see that if you're listening to this on a podcast platform like Apple Podcasts, it's actually, the link is in your app. So just find
just
the link there.
I just put the note for
the show
life
notes
and death
there.
Of helicopter commuting video in the topic too. Because right, I have the Notion page up too. I'm editing it as we go.
Yeah, there we go. We're all a fan of Notion.
Yeah,
thank you.
Cool.
great service. But when we come back, we're going to be talking about cruise ships. Is it the end of the cruise ship as we know it with COVID-19? Stay tuned.
Hey, everybody. Let me take a moment to thank Fenwick and West. They're one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and life sciences. They operate in the fast lane of innovation, where ideas often outpace changes in the law. That's where you find Fenwick's autonomous transportation and shared mobility practice, steering startups, technology giants, and major automotive companies through rapidly evolving legal, business, and regulatory challenges, which we talk about here on Inside Transportation all the time. A Silicon Valley original, Fenwick is a national law firm with offices in Mountain View, San Francisco, Seattle, New York, Santa Monica, and even Shanghai. So here's your call to action. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at fenwick.com. That's FENWICK.com. Thanks again to Fenwick for providing great legal services to me. I use them personally for our investments, and for supporting independent media like Inside Transportation. Let's get back to this amazing episode.
And we're back on the Inside Transportation podcast, talking about taking all your questions. These are all your questions that you emailed me throughout the weeks. in our mailbag episode, and somebody asked about cruise ships. So the CDC recently extended a ban on cruise ship sailings until the end of September. Some cruise ships had hoped to begin sailing again by August, but obviously, as we all know, COVID-19 cases in the U.S. continued to rise. This was a really interesting piece of news I read last week, is that the CDC acknowledged that cruise ships helped spread COVID-19, and the agency committed 38,000 hours managing the pandemic coming from ships.
Wow, these guys are real rocket scientists, huh? Oh, really? The cruise ships? when everybody got off on the dock and they all had it, that was the indication that it might have been the cruise ship? Okay, got it. Yeah.
Construction efforts on the largest. Have you seen this cruise ship, Jason? It's huge. It's called Wonder of the Seas, and they had hoped to launch it in China, and they, you know, are pausing all construction efforts on that. This is while Carnival has also sent ships to the scrapyard. So where's the future of the cruise ship, okay, Jason? Do you think people are going to be okay with this?
I just want to be clear. I am a never cruiser. I have like three basic rules in life. No cruises, no buffets, and no all-you-can-eat sushi. These are three things I just don't want anything to do with. Now, this Wonder of the Seas, I'm looking at pictures of the back of it. And is it the aft deck? The back deck is the aft deck or something? It is unbelievable looking. Like, I can't believe that this is being made. And you can actually see a picture of it under construction. I will show you this picture. Oh, wait, I'm going to copy this picture into the Notion of it under construction.
There we go.
Let's see if it works. It did. Okay, you see it there in the Notion page? Look at the back deck. I guess that's the aft or whatever. It's got like, what is the, how many lay? There's like some.
That's incredible.
The back
wow.
is, that's a pool with a bunch of like Colosseum style seatings. And then there's 1, 2, 3, 4, yeah, 5, 6, 7, 8 decks above it. In like, I guess you could have a concert there or something. Maybe it's for concerts on the back of the boat. I think it's going to be over for a couple of years. They're all going to go bankrupt, and they should not get bailed out from America, because all these cruise ships, the American ones, supposedly American ones, all, since they're cruise companies, base themselves in other countries and don't pay taxes, right?
Like the Cayman Islands.
Right. And then they're like, oh, can we get a bailout? And it's like, didn't you do the tax loophole or go to the, I mean, it's not really a loophole. It's within, they're within their right as a cruise company to base themselves on an island. I mean, that seems actually quite logical. But you don't get to then go to the United States where your customers are and then ask us to bail you out. So I hate cruises. Mm. I've never been on one. I think it's like, it's everything I hate, right? Like the people who go to it are like, oh, it's incredible. All you can eat crab claws. And I'm just like, okay, anytime anything is all
it's
you
like Vegas on a boat.
Right. And you know what I hate about Vegas is like, I hate having to walk through the lobby of the casino, mm-hmm, right? And so I like to stay at the, what used to be the Mandarin Oriental next to the Aria, because there's no casino.
Oh, yes.
It's so much nicer. Right. And it's, you know, it's like marginally more expensive, like $50 more a night. And I still like the Aria. But you know, I prefer that because you didn't have to go through a smoky casino. So I hate cruises. I'm glad they're over. I have no interest. Maybe like the Disney cruises, I got marginally interested in a Disney cruise, because I had kids.
Because of your,
yeah,
girls?
Yeah, because my girls, yeah. Like, and I was like thinking about it, and I was like, nah, I just literally like, I don't want to be on that cruise ship that flipped over. Remember the one in Italy? I forgot the name of that one. Talking about tragedies. There was someone that the guy, like the captain, knocked the ship over and went overside, and then the captain left the ship. Remember that? He yes. abandoned ship.
The Costa Concordia.
The Costa Concordia.
That was
tragedy.
The name of it.
And did you yeah. ever see what they had to do to lift it back up? The guy just basically ran into the rocks.
No, I didn't.
They had to they had to like have scuba divers go under, put flotation things under there, and like return it over. But people died,
and
the captain abandoned ship. He abandoned ship wow. after he shipwrecked it. Have you been on a cruise? Yeah. And would you go on a cruise?
Never been on a cruise.
Anything appealing about
would
that?
Would I go on a cruise?
Ever thought about it?
I mean, have you seen that new Virgin cruise ship line, like the Virgin Cruises? Have you seen that? So Richard Branson came up with a cruise line before all of this happened, and it's very geared to millennials. But like, no, I wouldn't take a cruise. Yeah. It's not worth it.
And then people are like, oh, you know what I love about my cruise? It's like, it's all you can drink. I'm like, all you can eat, all you can drink, like, you know, what do they call that? Like, bottomless margaritas or whatever,
bottomless mimosas or whatever.
No, not interested. Not anything bottomless gluttonous. Bubbles. I'm not interested. Like gluttony as a marketing tool for me is just falls flat.
Yeah. I mean, I think as we've kind of discussed this, right, when you're thinking about travel trends and how people are going to be spending their time recreationally in vehicles or boats or whatever it is, it's going to be a lot of camping. It's going to be a lot
RVs.
Of, you know, living in a van, RVs.
Van life.
I mean, that's the new era. So I think COVID-19 is going to mark a shift where people are going to go from more collective forms of entertainment or transportation to more individualized, sure. but sustainable, right? So like we're kind of seeing people shift from public transit to like scooters, you know, maybe more personalized public transit options like these shuttle vans that are kind of coming out. So I think that's what COVID's going to, that we're going to get out of this is that people are going to want things that are more individualized or smaller. And that's going to be a trend that's going to, you know, keep going, right? Because I don't think there's going to be a lot of people that remember, or they're going to remember what happened, you know, this year. And they're going to say, well, you know, it might be better if I just
stay out
of this
cruise.
How
are you feeling personally about flights? Would you take a flight in 2020, knowing what we know right now?
You know,
we're taping this in the middle
of
July, podcast
series,
pre-surge.
Earlier well, we've talked about this two times, and both times I said yes. I'm starting to shift my opinion. I don't think I would. I don't think I would. Have you changed your mind?
I would not get on a commercial flight in 2020 at this point, only because although I think it is low risk, I don't think it's worth the risk. I'm 49, so I'm kind of on the bubble. Mm-hmm. So I just don't think it's worth it. I was talking to my wife about it, and I was like, okay, under what circumstances would I be compelled to take a flight? I'm like, well, not for a vacation. I've been everywhere on the planet. You know, like I've been very lucky as like a business executive and speaker. You know, like I've been to every country that I, you know, I've been to so many countries. I don't have this wanderlust where I have to get back to some country. Number two, like, would I go to close a business deal? That's when I previously got on a flight. Well, I don't need to close any more business deals. Like, I'm in pretty good shape and they're all occurring on Zoom. So nobody wants me to travel. Like it used to be people were like, if you want my business, you got to travel, son. You got to meet me where I am. Come to Texas, you know, like, okay, I'm dragging myself to Baltimore or, you know, Boston to go get money, you know, like I'd have to go there. Right. It's a shine of respect. And now people are like, don't get on a flight. I don't want you to risk it. And then the other thing is like, maybe I want to go skiing or do an activity. It's like, well, I can just drive. So I think it's just, all going to be about driving. I think the airlines are going to have serious problems. I mean, they already do. My understanding was that the furloughs are going to become more permanent job losses. So the second wave of job losses is coming. Somebody was telling me they have people in their family who are all like in something August or September 1st are all getting laid off if the airlines don't turn around.
Yeah, I think I'm seeing some high numbers, like 50-60% of, you know, staffs at United and American Airlines and all these big airlines are going to be cut. Side note for you though, side question. In one of your books, you once said that if you wanted to be like a successful venture capitalist, you had to live in Silicon Valley. Do you stand with that statement?
No, not anymore.
After all
totally,
of this?
Totally changed. And that was in the book Angel, my one and only book. So thank you for saying in one of my books. I am working on the second. But I did say that. I was like, you know, you really need to have access to the deal flow here. And then what's crazy about our industry now is all the deal flow is occurring online. And people are investing in companies without meeting the founders in person. And we used to have this whole thing like, I really got to get to know you. We're going to be business partners. We got to spend time together. We got to go on hikes together. Kumbaya. Got to break bread, all the stuff. And yeah, that's over. People adapt. Humans adapt. I mean, that's, I think, what we'll learn through this, you know, is humans are very adaptable.
Agreed. I think we've all changed our habits and, you know, like when we reflect like what we used to do on a Saturday a year ago from today, you know, it's a lot different than what we're doing for fun nowadays, right? Or for work.
I used like to take my daughter to the movies every Friday or Saturday. It was like our daddy-daughter tradition. since she was like 6 years old. Mm-hmm. I would take her to a movie and go get pizza or ice cream or whatever. We loved it. We were part of the movie club at AMC where we got like, you know, 20% off and get, you know, tickets and all this stuff. Yeah. And we loved it. We were addicted. Like we would just, we'd have the whole schedule of movies. We'd plan it out. Hey, this week we'll see this. Next week we'll see that. We saw every Marvel movie, every Star Wars. We saw every movie. And we haven't done that in 4 or 5 months, you know, and it's a, you know, it's a bummer, but we're doing other things. So, you know, we adapt.
Yeah. I remember I used to drive out to different coffee shops in the area I was living in, just trying to get some inspiration or try to like sit with other people who were also working. Yeah. And yeah. And now the thought of it just, I can't do it anymore. Like I probably can't do it.
I am now going to, because of that same thing, I gotta, you know, I took my daughters out to get boba or ice cream 3 times in the last 3 weeks. So I take them out like once a week and you could sit outside and you're very far away from everybody else. You get your stuff from a window.
Right.
Cause you don't, it seems like it's, remember like 4 months ago, we're like, oh my God, we got to wipe down every package that comes to your house. And they're like, yep.
I remember
that's not going to happen. You're not getting coronavirus from that. That was all a mistake. But yeah, I mean, the thing about just putting a pin in the CDC thing, like, and just, they can force people to not go on cruises, but we can't have a federal mandate to wear masks. Got it. Okay. Okay. People are not allowed to smoke inside restaurants because the workers are at risk, but we can't ban people from going into places without a mask during a pandemic where we're on pace to have 400,000 Americans die in a year. Okay. Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's like, none of this makes any sense.
Did you see that? Did you see that announcement that a grocery store chain specifically said, we're not going to be enforcing any mask mandates. I think it was like Winn-Dixie, the grocery store chain in like Florida of all places.
Lord.
They're like, we think masks are too polarizing, so we're not going to enforce any rules. So it's
you know
kind
what
of
else
interesting
is polarizing?
That,
you know what there's universal agreement on? Being on a ventilator. It sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So I hope we get through this. But thanks, everyone, for your questions. To wrap things up, because last week we talked about the Ford Bronco. Mm-hmm. So not even a few days after Ford showed off the new Bronco, Chinese automaker Wei showed off renderings of the P01 SUV, which looks very similar to the Bronco. There's not a full unveil yet, but you know, what are some of your thoughts on this rendering, Jason? Do you think it's dope?
Yeah,
or dope?
So we the Bronco was so dope. We did dope or super dope, and we confirmed it was super dope, like the Cybertruck. This is a hard nope for me. I'll tell you why. It looks like, what was that Jeep? That, not the Wrangler, but the first time they came out with a Jeep, like a Liberty or something, or a Cherokee.
Yeah,
this has shades of Jeep Cherokee to me, like from the 90s. Like when you look at the from the back, it looks exactly like a Jeep Cherokee, does it not?
It does. No, I in fact, I thought it was a Jeep Cherokee when I first saw it, but it kind of opened up this bigger thought in my head where it's like, okay, the Bronco's getting so much love right now. Jeeps sell really well. People love Subarus. Rivian's kind of going for that same aesthetic for like an outdoorsy car. Do you think every car company is going to make a car like this that's rugged and just looks like something you want to take out to the mountains? Because I feel like that's where things are going in the auto space in 2020 is we all have to be driving an off-road vehicle to go to the grocery store.
Well, yeah, no, this is part of part of the dystopian future we all face is you just want to be ready for like society to break down. Remember during the first couple weeks of the pandemic, the panic buying and stuff like that? And then remember the lines at the hospital? Like some of this stuff was scary, you know? And I think when people get scared, they start thinking about edge cases, right? You get lulled into this like, oh, society is just perfect. Like, you can just click and you can get whatever you want. You can get whatever drugs you need. You know, you can get whatever, you know, health supplies you need. And then you have a pandemic and everything shuts down. And it's like, oh, Americans are allowed in 3 countries right now. You know, like we never thought that day would happen.
Turkey, Mexico, and Turkey.
Would you like to go to Mexico, Turkey? It's like, I mean, did you ever think we'd live to a day where the United States... our ability to travel around the world is the equivalent of like a North Koreans, you know, or like somebody from Cuba. Like Where are Cubans allowed to go? I don't know. North Koreans allowed to go. I'm not sure, but it's pretty limited, right?
Right. No, I agree with you. I never thought in a million years that, like, because, you know, people would always brag about having American visas because you could literally go anywhere without having to get a permit. And this is my prediction. By the end of next year, I think when things have tided over a little bit, this is what we're going to see. We're going to see a movement of people who don't want to get a COVID vaccine. And they're probably the same people who don't want to wear masks right now. And what's going to happen is that countries around the world are going to require to see whether you have a COVID antibody test.
Sure, why not? Of course.
And whether you're negative. And that's the only way you're going to be allowed 100%. In a lot of these countries. And I think that's going to be the
I got tested
the
again
of
today.
Travel.
I got the one where they stick it up your nose. That's unpleasant for less than a half a second or a second. But it's unpleasant. Have you had that one done yet?
No. And the reason why is because first of all, I haven't been having any symptoms. Second of all, it's like you can't find it anywhere.
I got the concierge doctor thing. Where so when you get the tip when you get the concierge doctor, they're like, you know, they can just send somebody to you. So literally somebody came to the house and tested everybody. This is the third time I've been tested.
Those are probably the first doctors that are going to have the vaccine when it comes out and it's readily available. It's going to be like the concierge.
Well,
doctors,
the NBA got in a lot of trouble because they're like, how come every NBA player got tested? Remember that? And they're like, yeah, there's no tests available unless you're like really sick or an NBA player. And the NBA players were like, I did two blood tests back in the day, like 2 months ago. And then I just did the first time the swab test. I'm just trying to be extra vigilant. And then I'm thinking about when things reopening. I wanted to make sure I had taken every test so I understood the process. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm feeling mildly optimistic about the news coming out about the vaccines, but I do think people are going to carry with them. You know, there will be some number of Americans, like 35%, that don't take this vaccine. And you know what? We'll probably be, if you just do the math, at some level of herd immunity, even with that. And then those people will just be risking their own lives, right? And it'll be like, okay, you know, you're want to take that kind of risk. Okay. But you know, they're,
yeah, that's going to be on them at the end of the day, right? Because, you know, people who right now, obviously, you know, the fact that they're not wearing masks, people who don't believe it's a real thing, whatever, they're putting other people at risk. But there's going to be a certain point where the tides change and they're putting themselves at risk. And then at that point, it's like,
Now we're just getting to the Darwin
it's on
Awards.
You. If you don't want to follow the rules, go ahead.
So this is not dope. This is like, it would be dope if the Jeep... Cherokee. If the Jeep Cherokee existed, this would be dope. And if it was 1994, it'd be dope. But it's not 1994. But I do think that it's awesome that people are making inspiring products in the automotive space.
I think it's okay. I mean, I would say it's a... Well, for me, it's a no.
Yeah, we set the benchmark at dope.
Because I'm worried
this is not nice or not nice.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just worried that automakers are just going to be following this Jeep model, and each one of these cars is going to kind of look the same. So I want more striking designs. I want something kind of interesting. I mean, I guess for a Chinese automaker, if they're trying to compete with Jeep or trying to compete with Subaru, whatever, works for them. But it's always interesting when you see a design that's truly radical, like we've seen with some of these Chinese automakers making really interesting cars.
We went through this before, by the way. Remember the Suzuki Samurai that was flipping on the road? Oh, you're too young maybe to remember the Suzuki Samurai. Do you remember this?
I am too young. No, I don't.
So
let
look up Suzuki Samurai.
The Suzuki
Samurai. So what happened
was
like Jeep Wranglers were getting, Broncos, Wranglers, all this stuff was, and the Jeep Cherokee was getting.
Oh, I've seen these around.
Very popular. And
yeah,
then it
I've
turned
seen
out
these around.
The Suzuki Samurai, it was the first one, first four-wheel drive that Suzuki sold in the U.S. And it wasn't super powerful, but it was very dangerous. They flipped. And so it became like this. A lot of them were flipping on the roads. And so There was a big controversy about them.
Yeah, I'm looking this up right now, and apparently there was a giant lawsuit, you know, worth $60 million in damages. Yeah,
and this actually made Consumer Report. It's interesting in terms of journalism. Consumer Reports, I think, was the one who made the video. So if you do, yeah, Suzuki Motor Company sued, I guess, the Consumer Union of the U.S., which is the nonprofit that runs Consumer Reports. Because they deemed it unsafe because they would do these rollover tests where they would put a bar across it. And there was some settlement. And in the settlement, Consumer Reports agreed that it never intended to imply that the Samurai easily rolls over in routine driving conditions. not easily. but they showed it like rolling and stuff like that. So it was like a 8-year lawsuit, it says. Wow. Oh, no, they filed it 8 years after the magazine gave a very unfavorable and much disputed review of the Suzuki Samurai, that it was not acceptable.
Wow, there was about 213 deaths and 8,200 injuries involving Suzuki Samurai rollovers.
I mean, if you just look at the car, you can see it looks like it's got a narrow wheelbase and, you know, it looks like it's going to flip over. Like when it's parked.
Well, what's old is new again. This is 2020. What's old is new again. We're all into these cars again. Thank you so much for joining us here today on the Inside Transportation Podcast. We'll see you all next week. Take care.
That was great.